Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Integral Podcast. Today we are joined by Roshan Karyappa. He is currently the Director of Marketing at Waymo. Besides that, he is a man of many parts. He is a singer, songwriter, he is a blogger, he is a social media influencer, and he runs a podcast as well. We shall talk to him today about the impact of working from home on the software industry. So, hey there Roshan, welcome to the show.
Hey Sanjeev, thanks so much for having me on your podcast and thank you for that lovely introduction as well.
Yeah, so today we're going to talk to you about a very interesting topic, which is working from home and its impact on the software sector. So you are the person who is absolutely qualified to talk to our audience about this. So why don't you just start off with telling a bit about Waymo?
Sure. Well, I mean, I can talk about my own personal experience and maybe a bit about, you know, what my colleagues have shared as well.
Yes. Right?
So just taking a step back and helping you understand what Waymo does. It's an enterprise application that's used by distributed sales teams, primarily in financial services organizations, that can help them understand, what is the optimal customer engagement and so on and so forth. That can improve and influence their outcomes, sales outcomes, right? So in India, we work with some of the largest banks and insurance companies like HDFC, ICICI, SBI Life, AXA, Allianz, and so on. We also work with these companies. Some of these deployments are outside of India and in Southeast Asia, for example, Vietnam, Indonesia, and Thailand, and so on.
Right.
We've also started expanding in the US. So we're a Series B startup. So we raised about $18 million from Emergence Capital and Sequoia Capital last year.
Right.
And we've been, you know, growing pretty rapidly, right? So that's a little bit about Waymo.
Mm-hmm.
So with respect to work from home, right, our leadership was extremely proactive.
Right.
I remember, I think around March 1st or 2nd week, we started recognizing that, you know, there's going to be a permanent shift. March 2nd week, at least a week before the lockdown was announced, we already had trials in place, right?
Yeah.
So all of us functional heads were asked to make 30, 60, 90 plans for all of our team members. And again, anything in Waymo is a grounds up exercise.
Okay.
So we keep these things extremely iterative, whether it's our cultural values, whether it's our OKRs or whatever. So these 30, 60, 90 day plans were evolved. Managers were kind of empowered to make decisions.
Okay.
And then, you know, I mean, we kind of rehearsed what we're going to do, right? How is this going to look like? I think that is the key, Sanjeev, because oftentimes, I mean, when you're trying to solve a problem, it really helps to articulate that problem. So you understand what the variables are. And how you can kind of attack the problem from different parts, different sides of the equation. Yeah.
Right. So now I'm sure we're getting very close to the 60th day of your plan. So, so what were the challenges? Now we have the 60th day. So what were the challenges on the, let's say, 7th day or the 10th day? So how, I mean, did you have to actually make a mental switch towards working from home?
Yeah, great question. So, yeah, I mean, we've crossed the 2-month mark. I think we did that last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely there are challenges, right? I mean, this is something that you cannot prepare for adequately enough, right?
Right.
So moving, I mean, I can only imagine how some of the larger organizations do this, but we're about 250 plus. And moving these people in about, you know, 6 or 7 different countries to distributed operations, sometimes, you know, some places overnight was definitely a challenge. I guess, you know, people people take a lot of things for granted when you're in the office. So if I were to resolve something, I mean, I could just walk up to a colleague and, you know, basically ask them about a particular thing and get a resolution in less than, you know, 30 seconds.
Yes.
Those are things that you cannot take for granted right now. Overall, you know, working around people with a shared purpose and a common goal is something that, you know, you cannot again sort of take for granted, right? Being in the same room as these people has a certain energy to it. And really, I mean, making that switch from that to, you know, being plugged in on your headphones, being available on Zoom, in front of the laptop all the time, perhaps, you know, working or operating out of a remote corner out of your house, right? Is definitely a switch. I believe the challenges were more personal than professional, right? Because at the end of the day, I mean, the environment makes the man, right? So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, it impacted everyone to begin with. And now we've kind of, I won't say, I mean, we're totally adjusted to this quote unquote new normal, but I feel we have a fair understanding. Yeah, so I won't say that people are completely adjusted right now, but they have a fair idea of what it takes to work from home.
Right. So were there, apart from the mental challenges, did you face any logistical challenges of having to move desktops, let's say, into the homes of your employees?
So most of us work with, you know, company laptops. So that wasn't really a challenge. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. So that, you know, logistical challenges, I mean, it's more about, you know, walking up to people, getting certain things done and so on and so forth. But not really like infrastructure or equipment challenges as such. Yeah, people in engineering may have a different view, but that is my perspective from what I know.
All right. So now working from home always brings a lot of communication challenges. Of course, technology eases our pain, but still we miss that human interaction. So now when it comes to communicating through tools like Zoom or Slack or you know, any other messenger app. So how did you actually deal with the challenges that it brings with it? Because sometimes, you know, people tend to read too much into the tone of your message because on the, may not be able to actually convey what you have to convey in the limited characters that you want to type on the device. So how did you handle these communication challenges?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point again, because a lot of the communication is subliminal, right? As much as we try to make it explicit, really delivering the message in person, you know, there is no equivalent to that, right?
Yes.
So I generally panicked about the whole situation very early on. And that is something that, you know, I mean, I don't see that as negative. I rather see that as one of my strengths. That I was able to recognize this and I panicked. So I really biased towards over communicating rather than under communicating.
Yes, right? Yes. Yeah.
So I've literally doubled, tripled my communication with my team.
Yes.
I'm not sure how much they appreciate it, but it gives me the mental clarity that, you know, that I have communicated everything possible from my end to them.
Yeah.
Right. So these are, so we do huddles fairly regularly. So we wanted to do a couple of huddles a day, but then that was a little bit of an overkill. So we're doing one huddle a day in the morning just to catch up on, hey, what is it that's on your plate? How can anyone else help you add more predictability, add more clarity for any of the things that you're doing?
Yeah.
And also I have started taking my one-on-ones with the team a lot more seriously as well. One thing that I've also started doing is writing a lot more, right? Even if it's the smallest of instructions, I really am investing time to write it down, make it super explicit and clear to whoever I'm dealing with about what the expectations are. Really, I'm not taking anything for granted from that perspective.
Right. So this over communication is a new phenomenon. One of our clients was a manager in another organization was telling us that his team seems to be online all the time. He was bombarded with messages from them. And it reached a point where he had to actually tell the team that, you know, they don't have to prove to him that they're actually working from home. So he trusts them implicitly as well. Right. So now what was
it's not from a perspective of, it's not from a perspective of, hey, are you working or, you know, monitoring people, right? Because I certainly believe that there is no end to that, and that's really the wrong way to bark upon. You want people to kind of own their outcomes and not really be bothered about what they're doing on a minute by minute basis, right? Mm-hmm. As long as they keep you informed reasonably about what is on their plate as such, right? So, not from that perspective, but from having to be a lot more responsive about things, right? So, I mean, we're about 12 of us in our team, and there's a lot of collaborative work that happens. You don't want anyone else to be waiting for you as such. So I certainly am very cognizant of that. I carry my phone around a lot more these days. In fact, the only time I think I don't have my phone is when maybe I wash utensils or I cook or clean or something of that sort, right? But otherwise, I mean, I'm plugged in all the time. And for better or for worse, I would say.
Okay, so that brings me to another related question. So what were your tools for communicating with the team? Was it just on an informal tool like WhatsApp, or was it more structured, like as in Slack or any other communication device?
So we were big fans of WhatsApp before the lockdown. And one positive change that I've noticed is that WhatsApp has become very informal right now. So people share photos of, the stuff that they cook, or some funny things, or photographs that they take, and so on and so forth. So WhatsApp has become light and personal right now, and a lot of the official communication has moved to Slack.
Right.
Files, plenty of those things, right? Status updates and so on and so forth. So that's really a positive thing, and Slack does the job, So really, I mean. In one of my sessions, I probably said this, that Slack was born at a time when they were founded in 2007 or 2008, right? During the crisis there. And if you told me about 10 or 11 years back that Slack was going to become as integral to work as it is right now, I would say you're being super optimistic, right?
Yeah.
And I am someone who, likes to use new technologies. I was an early user on Slack. I think I probably used it in 2010-ish, 10-11-ish, around 12 for sure, right? But I'm not sure if that was 6 months back or what, behind that or whatever. So I was an early user on Slack, was an early user, I would say, for plenty of other collaboration tools as well, right? And Slack really does the job in terms of, communication. And then we complement it with Zoom now. So Zoom is, again, a fairly powerful tool, right? So if, any of us have lived through the last 5, 10, 15 years of, virtual conferencing and stuff like that, you've realized how it is, right? I mean, the WebEx of the world. Install drivers, install plugins, open a browser, different browser, this, that, whatever. We are chatting on Zoom right now, and it's fantastic, right? So it does the job seamlessly and so reliable as well, right? So between Slack and Zoom and email, I pretty much have everything covered. The broad point is, as I mentioned earlier, WhatsApp is back to being an informal, informal channel of communication.
Yeah. So again, see, work from home again has slightly altered the way people think about work itself, right? So before the lockdown, you and me would just go to work and then put our backs down, sit down on our desks, and we would just get into work mode, right? And then whenever we had to go home, we would just sit, turn off our systems and head back home, and then would be disconnected from work. So we had a particular in time or an out time which the organization would measure as well. And now with work from home, all that seems to have completely disappeared. So, I mean, how did your employees handle this complete absence of in and out time?
So we don't have very hard and fast in and out times. I mean, teams sort of have timings that they are comfortable with. Like, I generally get to office usually by 9:30, and I like to leave by around 5 or 6, and then log back in after a couple of hours. you know, so that's really my schedule.
Yeah.
But I've seen, you know, people prefer 12 to 10 and people prefer even later, in fact, right? So, yeah, so we don't really have ins and outs.
Yeah.
But one thing that I've noticed is everyone has become phenomenally productive.
Yes.
Right. I don't know, I mean, if it's just a personal bias, but I've seen people do fantastic things. Like, you know, over the last 2 months, we have moved literally 10,000 plus frontline personnel. These could be insurance agents, collection agents, advisors, etc. Right? Onto remote operations at some of the large companies.
Yeah.
Right. In fact, I mean, just last week we had a holiday to compensate for all of the burnout that you know may have happened because of that. Right. Because people are really stretching themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and I could not be more happier with my team and with the with all of my colleagues at Wimo. They've done phenomenally well.
Right. So do you have to tell your team that, guys, now we have done enough for the day. It's time for you guys to switch off now. Have you had to tell this to anyone within your team?
Interesting question. So I work with a very young team, and what happens is, I mean, they tend to push themselves a lot. I tend to be a little more old-fashioned on that front. I mean, if you're working, you know, 100% work, otherwise, I mean, just switch off and do something else.
Mm-hmm.
This half and half of, you know, maybe having a YouTube video on and, like, you know, watching something and then, you know, switching between that tab to another tab to, you know, finish half an email, mm-hmm. right, is just a downer, right? And so my instructions have always been clear with my team that, look, if you don't feel like working, that's perfectly fine. You're not a machine,
yeah.
right? I don't expect anyone, for that matter, to log in at like 9:30 and then, you know, not do anything but work for like 9 hours after that, right? Or 10 hours after that. That's not mm-hmm. how we are wired.
Mm-hmm.
Just be aware of yourself in terms of what your productivity peaks are. And maximize on that, right? So, for instance, I mean, my productivity peak is when I've had my black coffee in the morning and, you know, I've just started my work, right? So, I know that I can get a good 1 hour solid of deep work then.
Yeah.
And I try not to distract myself with emails or with any of the urgent but not important stuff. So those are some things that, you know, I anyway tell them, but yeah, I mean, last week, for instance, a couple of them were not well, but, you know, we had a few campaigns running and, you know, my instruction again was like, you know, guys, I mean, let it be. It's okay. Take a breather, right? Mm-hmm. Work when you really want to work and right. don't really push yourself. I mean, obviously, there are exceptions. Sometimes you have to do what you have to do.
Right.
But overall, I think, yeah, you should be a little more thoughtful about the kind of work that you do, about how you do it.
Right. That's a very valid point. And how did the female team members react, you know, when this lockdown happened and they had to work from home? Did they have any specific requests to you in terms of seeking some time off or, you know, giving them some, you know, other benefits of, you know, flexibility in terms of looking after their families also, because they might be having other family members at home. So was that a problem for you guys?
I think personal time has increased on average, right?
Right.
Because the fact that you're at home,
mm-hmm.
I think if you're a little smart about your schedule, you can spend a lot more time with your, you know, wife or kids or whoever, right?
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, for the last 60 days, I've had dinner with my wife. Right.
Wow.
Not that I have any choice right
yeah,
now.
That's one of the upsides of the lockdown, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, there's certainly an upside, and you know, you can find a lot of shared activities as well, right? So I think if you're smart about your schedule, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
From a company perspective, again, I mean, you know, last week we ran some data analysis and we figured that, you know, people had not consumed enough of their leaves, right? So we just saw that pattern where, you know, people hadn't consumed leaves in a while, which is again, I mean, you know, it's a given, right? People think that they're at home. What will they do with that offer, whatever? So we've actually sent out a communique to everyone saying, hey guys, please take some time off, right? So in fact, last week was a forced holiday for, you know, part of the team, precisely for that, right? So we don't want people burning out. So learn to balance this out, because quite frankly, nobody knows when we will revert to what looked like, let's say, Jan or February, right? You know, for all effective purposes, assume that this is going to last for a while, right? And if it's going to last for a while, you know, you have to prep accordingly. This is not a sprint, it's a marathon, right? So that's the expectations that we've set.
Right. So now, coming back to your domain of marketing and sales, we've seen now that most of the industry events or other seminars have not happened, and are not likely to happen in the near future as well. So how has your strategies evolved considering this, and how has the market reacted to some of the active sales activities or marketing activities that you have undertaken? Have you seen any shifts in consumption patterns, or is just has been business as usual?
See, there's obviously a slowdown, right? I mean, the fact that people are not going out at events, people are not spending as much and so on. Obviously, there is a, you know, slowdown. No two ways about it.
Yes.
And you mentioned events and trade shows and so on. So that was a key channel for us. I would say 30 to 40% of our leads and opportunities came from that channel. And you know, literally overnight, that has disappeared, right? So these things happen. I mean, so this is the second large crisis that I'm dealing with. I consider myself fortunate for having gone through that experience in 2008, 2009.
Yes.
You know, people revert to normal sooner than expected. Yes, I mean, there is always a shift in the median. You know, your channels will change, your messaging will have to change, so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, you just have to figure a way to be relevant to the prospect or customer, and that means, you know, finding newer places where these people are, and, you know, articulating your product value and messaging in such a way that it's relevant to them, and so be it, right? That's what you should be doing anyway. One thing that's also happened is, in times of a crisis, people go back to essentials. They revisit their fundamentals. Right. So on any given day, as a marketing person, you should still be questioning all of your tactics. Right. I don't say strategy, but I say tactics. So what channels you're using, you know, what campaigns you're running, so on and so forth. But we do tend to become slightly complacent in good times, and we don't really rethink a lot of these things. But in times of a crisis like this, there's no option. You have to rethink that. Right. Yeah. So fortunately for us at Vaimo, we were in the process of rethinking some of these things when this whole COVID situation happened, right? So to give you an example, up until February of this year, we hadn't done a single webinar, right?
Yeah.
Which is blasphemous for a B2B marketing team, right?
Yes, yes.
But then, I mean, thankfully we did that in February. We had some learnings, and since then, you know, we've done roughly one webinar every week, right?
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, these things, things change. You just have to figure, you know, how you can stay relevant and keep executing, I guess.
Yeah, and how do you see marketing channels evolving now? I think a lot of these marketing campaigns like will be on the digital platform, right? So digital marketing will get a huge leg up now. So within digital marketing, how do you see the scene being played out compared to the pre-lockdown period?
See, again, digital is a medium, right? The one change that I see forthcoming is the fact that digital is going to become a key branding push, right?
Okay.
Because normally people kind of think of lead acquisition, so on and so forth, right? Like, you're familiar with this form fills and landing pages and so on and so forth.
Yes.
But considering that, you know, your customers are going to spend more and more time online, You really have to look at digital as a branding measure, right? And if that becomes a branding measure, then it really becomes important what is the kind of messaging that you put out, right? It's no longer about see, click and buy, or, you know, sign up for a demo or whatever else. It's about how can you be interesting? How can you be useful? How can you be relevant? How can you even be entertaining to your prospect, right? Or whoever is looking at your ad, for example. So one thing that we have done is we've started investing in account-based marketing tools specifically. So we're deploying one of these tools in July. And also we've rethought our social media strategy. In fact, I mean, again, social media is something that, you know, we were using as a sort of a broadcast channel, right, for updates and so on. But we've really rethought that, you know, recently to see, you know, how we can be a little more relevant and useful. I mean, digital as a branding measure is going to increase, in my opinion.
Wow, okay, that's insight into the future. So now, what is the future?
Sorry, just to add to that, right? So that also means that you know, every person, every company should start thinking like a broadcaster, right?
Yes, that's very interesting.
Think of yourself as like a media channel or a podcaster or whatever it is, right? So if you want to vie for your prospect or customer's attention, start thinking in that line, right? So what should you do? What should you say to get that attention, you know?
That's a very interesting thing, and that's a thing to watch out for as well. So now coming, winding back into this work from home trend. So do you see this trend persisting even after the lockdown is completely lifted?
See, first of all, you don't know when this lockdown or, you know, whatever is going to last for, right? I mean, it's going to, how should I put it? You know, to put it plainly, you don't know when you're going to go back to normal and what that normal is going to look like.
We don't know, right? What is the new normal?
So, I mean, I've done 4 podcasts on this with very, very smart people. In fact, I mean, just yesterday, I was speaking to Balaji Srinivasan and Sri Thiruvadantai on the very same thing, right? And really, I mean, at this point of time, it's a black box. I don't know if people will find a vaccine, we'll develop antibodies, some kind of herd immunity, whatever it is, right? Or this thing could just become an endemic thing that we live with, right? I don't know. I don't know that. For all effective purposes, I think it's good to assume that this is going to last.
Okay.
And that's something, I mean, that my team was really disappointed to hear this. But, you know, it's also my job to give bad news as quickly as possible in, in a sort of a palatable fashion. Right? So, yeah, I mean, at the very minimum, I'm not going to be going back to office in another 2-3 months.
Right.
And I don't think anyone else is really in a hurry to go back to office as well.
Okay.
So what will this new normal look like?
Yeah.
Look, I firmly believe that any of these crises, right, are sort of forcing functions for whatever trends that are happening already, right? You know, there's a famous meme that was circulated some time back. Who led digital disruption in your company? Was it your CIO or was it COVID?
I would definitely say COVID more than the CIO.
Exactly. So you really don't have a choice with some of these things. So yeah, I mean, remote work was already kind of catching on, and now it's now it's a reality.
Right? So now we're all digital nomads now, effectively.
Correct. Exactly. So a lot of these trends will, you know, I mean, it's here to stay, right? So if not a completely different normal, I mean, the median has shifted. Right. And more importantly for me, whenever you go back to office or whenever you go back to your old ways, I think and that could even be, you know, getting to meet your friends or going to a bar or whatever it is. Right. I think you'll go back with a purpose. I feel like for a lot of time, I mean, we had switched off, you know, we were there, but not there.
Yeah.
You know? maybe because of our phones or, you know, because of the pace of things or whatever. So this is like a universal pause button, right? Literally, the world has come to a standstill. And so whenever we go back, I think we will be a lot more thoughtful, a lot more loving, a lot more caring, a lot more mindful of everything around us and really not take things for granted, I feel.
Yeah. So one thing you already mentioned that you've already seen productivity rise within your teams. So I am of the opinion that this work from home will actually change the demographics of our workforce also. Because a lot of women who are extremely capable had to take breaks from work, to look after families, etc. So I think more talented women will come back into the workforce and hopefully improve the quality of goods and services we as a country put out as well. Right?
Absolutely. No, I mean, if as a company you don't have a well thought out strategy on how you're going to hire more women, right? Then I think you're sort of lagging behind.
Yes.
And I don't mean that in some sort of an egalitarian, you know, libertarian, whatever view. How should I put it? I mean, not for any. Even capitalistically, right? As a cold blooded capitalist.
Yeah.
I think if you don't have a well thought out strategy on that, I think you're losing out, right? I've seen remarkably talented women take a break for maternity or whatever, and then struggle to get back in the workforce. I mean, things are like definitely improving, right? But as a company, as you shift to more and more of like an outbound hiring approach, right? Where you know the kind of candidate you want, you need to go and get that candidate rather than, you know, putting out a job from job description form and having 1,000 people apply and really filter out all the crap, right? As we adopt this sort of an outbound hiring method, I think it's integral for organizations to figure, how they can source from these sort of opportunity pockets, I would call it.
Wow. Okay. That's a great word. Right. So now that brings us to another interesting thing that you do, which is run a podcast called the Bharat Vartha Podcast. So I've been a huge fan of your podcast. And tell us a bit more about how it all came about. How did you put this together with your friends?
So I run two podcasts right now, Bharat Vartha and The Startup Operator. So let me talk about Bharat Vartha very briefly. We are all part of WhatsApp groups with plenty of people. I'm sure that you are part of 4 or 5 WhatsApp groups and you discuss social issues, economic issues, political issues, whatever, ad nauseum, right? Bharat Vartha is sort of an evolving conversation to that end, right? What happens on the textual medium is sort of two things, right? So one is it's very, very difficult to unpack complex issues, right? Because really, I mean, how long are you going to go and thread messages? It's going to be very difficult, right?
Yes.
You have to be to the point, and God forbid someone sends a 100-line message on WhatsApp, you don't feel like reading it, right? But conversation is very, very different, right? You and I can have a conversation about something for an hour and really totally unpack that, right? Second, I also feel that, to the point that you mentioned earlier, we are very quick to impute motive on a textual medium.
We now getting into reading the tone of the message. I mean, how do you read?
Correct.
Understand the tone of the message, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So, but whereas when you're in conversation, it's always good to do this anyway, to assume that, people have the best intentions, right? Especially in a debate or whatever. But in conversation, there's no room for that, right? So, you can really let yourself be intellectually curious, intellectually free, and sort of have that conversation on any of these complex issues and not be restricted to curt replies about something or right, left binaries and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah.
So Bharat Vartha is an evolving conversation.
Yeah.
A few of my good friends, you would have seen them on Twitter as well, Ashish, Srivatsa, and so on, right? So yeah. Harsh, Rajiv, and so on. So we really, you know, sort of thought that there needs to be a platform like this for the for discussing Indian political, social, and economic issues, right?
Yep.
India is a fairly complex country. It's a large country. And really, I mean, if you look at the lens in which it's examined, it's still examined in a very Western framework, right?
Very
Rajiv Malhotra has a fantastic book on this called Being Different.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
The drishti that we examine all of our matters concerning India is still a very Western framework as such.
Yeah.
Right. And it's sort of good to look at it from a native lens, from a more dharmic lens, I would say.
Yes.
And that's really what Bharatvarta is about. Bharatvarta is about looking at these, you know, politics, policy, social issues from a native lens, right? And, you know, when we started out, I mean, we had this thought process of like, you know, keeping it very concise to 25, 30 minutes. In fact, I mean, if you go back and look at some of our episodes, it was, you know, 25, 30, then 30 became 40, and then 40, we said like, you know, let's do 45.
Yeah.
And today, I mean, it's very rare that a podcast doesn't extend to beyond 1 hour. Right?
1 hour. Yeah.
In fact, I mean, the podcast we had with Sridhar Vembu and Harsh Gupta,
yeah.
Which is a fantastic podcast. I mean, I highly recommend it about India's economic prosperity as such.
Yes.
Went on for 1.5 hours. And literally, I mean, you know, but for the fact that I had to be mindful of people's time, that could have gone on for easily twice the amount of time. Right.
And let me tell you, Roshan, it's my favorite episode too in the whole series.
Oh, great. Yeah, great. As a Zoho partner, I mean, you should say that.
Yeah. I should have put this disclaimer in the beginning. Now that you've spilled the beer. Yes.
Yeah, that's a fascinating episode. And also, I mean, it's one of our first Purvap episodes, right? Where we bring two people from fairly different backgrounds to talk about something and really try to understand each other's perspective in that sense. So yesterday, again, we had Balaji Srinivasan and Sri Thiruvadantai.
Yeah.
Now, Balaji Srinivasan is West Coast technology, Silicon Valley based, right? And then Sri Thiruvadanta is on the East Coast, more finance than technology.
Yes.
You know, coming at these issues from their own perspectives, right? And really, I mean, the amount of learning there is in sincerely looking at matters and trying to unpack it is phenomenal, right? So that is really what Bharata is about. We've done about 18 episodes right now. And we've gotten better with every episode, I feel. At least the numbers indicate that.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, hopefully this evolves into something bigger.
Yeah, so that I can vouch for
that. Yeah, sorry, that was not a brief description.
No, like, it's no way.
But yeah, that is Bharatvarta.
Yeah.
But with Startup Operator, let me keep it very brief.
Yeah.
So I tend to share a lot of, I don't want to call it knowledge or wisdom. I just tend to share some experiences of having worked in the early stage growth stage startups, in early stage growth stage startups for the last 12 years. I used to share this on LinkedIn. I still do, in fact, pretty regularly. So I think I have about 100, 150 posts on LinkedIn around, you know, operating at startups. And I just felt that, you know, all of the startup content out there is either very founder focused, which is absolutely, you know, I mean, absolutely relevant, right? I mean, God knows founders can do with some more help.
Mm-hmm.
Or very tactical, right? Like 4 ways to do this, 10 ways to do something else, 15 ways to do yet another thing and so on,
yes.
Right? So there is nothing in it for operators. Who are, you know, who probably own a function at an early stage or growth stage startup and are having to, you know, put things in place and move at a phenomenally rapid pace, yeah. Right? There's nothing in it for them and nothing in it for them from a strategic perspective. Not just from a perspective of, you know, how do you execute that particular webinar or, you know, what you should do about events or whatever. Really about how should you go about building your team, you know, how do you develop culture, so on and so forth, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So startup operator is basically wisdom for operators, and we curate this content from people who are operating at early stage growth stage startups. We've had some phenomenally talented people on the podcast, and you should definitely check it out. We are at Operator Startup on Twitter.
We're
available on Anchor and other platforms as well.
Right. The links to those two podcasts would be in the description box of this episode as well. I completely urge all the listeners to check out Bharat Vartha at least, because the it has got a galaxy of stars, you know, chatting with Roshan, all very accomplished people, and who have taken the time off to share their knowledge with us. It's a phenomenal series. And with this, Roshan, we would like to thank you for being such a wonderful guest on the show. And you have actually given us some wide-ranging perspectives, starting from, you know, being a startup operator to a podcast host, and your role as a director, and how you manage teams, working from home, challenges, etc. It's been terrific having you. And we look forward to definitely having you back again one of these days.
Hey, thank you so much for this opportunity, Sanjeev. It was a pleasure talking to you, as always. I also feel that this is an amazing initiative that you've started, because really, you know, people can use a lot more help on, you know, how they should go about and execute, especially in these times of a crisis. So all the best with Integral, and I hope, you know, your subscribers grow with every day.
Thank you so much, Roshan.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening. Hope you like the show. This episode was brought to you by Integra Books. Integra Books provides a business owner with a unique solution which combines an easy-to-use accounting software with a dedicated accountant. Integra Books is an authorized partner of Zoho. With Zoho's 40-plus apps, you can put your entire business on the cloud. For more on what we do, please visit integrabooks.co or drop in a line to contact@integrabooks.co. Our social media links are in the description box below. So get in touch with Integra Books to transform your business.